Welcome everyone to this episode of Speaking of Translation. I'm Eve Beaudeux.
And I'm Corinne McKay. Thanks for joining us.
In this episode, we're going to discuss a topic that both of us have been significantly involved in over our careers, and that topic is volunteering in service to the translation and interpreting professions, whether that be local, national, or even at an international level.
So today we're going to take a look at how work-related volunteering can benefit you and, of course, the associations or organizations that you volunteer for. We'll take a look at how to set limits on your volunteer work, how to make volunteering a strategic part of your career development, and what types of volunteer opportunities you might want to consider at various phases of your career.
Yeah, thanks, Corinne. And before we dive in, then we wanted to give you guys a couple of updates from us. So I think I mentioned in our last episode that I was going to participate in the book fair at the recent American Translators Association conference. And I did do that. Yeah. And I did participate in the book fair. Yeah. And it was a lot of fun. I had a great time talking to people about my pet topic, which if you're a longtime listener, you know, is maintaining your second language. So, you know, kind of ideas for professionals like translators and interpreters, how to keep their language skills strong. And of course, it was fun to sell my books too. So I did like talking to people and selling my books. So if any of our listeners want a copy, you didn't have to go to the ATA to get it. You can get it on Amazon in print form or in Kindle form. And you can also get it on Apple Books as well. And lastly, I wanted to say that I'm giving you all a preview of something I'm going to be doing in the new year. I will be hosting an online book club for translators around the world, and we'll be focusing on literature and translation, of course, or about translation. So stay tuned for details on that, but I kind of wanted to give you guys a heads up so that you can think about joining the book club in the new year.
Cool. I want to join.
I know. I'm super excited. Yeah. I've been talking actually with Emily Saffron, kind of bouncing ideas off her, and it's just been really exciting. So
great.
So Corinne, what did you want to share with us on that note today?
Yeah, so I guess the big development for me personally is that my 7-year term on the American Translators Association board wrapped up at the conference in Palm Springs 2 weeks ago. So I'm feeling very free and relaxed.
Congratulations, and thank you for all your service.
Yeah, thank you. It was a delight. It really was. And I was ready to, you know, move to a new chapter, which we'll talk about today as well. So I'll also mention that on the Classes for Translators tab of my website, trainingfortranslators.com, our listeners can find out about a couple of upcoming online courses, including Karen Kochik's very popular Editing and Proofreading for Into English Translators course that's sold out twice, so we're running it again. And I'll be teaching Marketing to Direct Clients, and both of those start in January. But the early bird rates for those end at the beginning of December, so check them out at trainingfortranslators.com if you're interested. So moving on to the meat of today's episode, how about if we start a bit by talking about our own professional volunteering backgrounds? So Eve, why don't you let us know what you've been up to in terms of volunteering throughout your career?
Yeah, and I wanted to say, kind of make a caveat here, that I think it's interesting for us to share that with our listeners, and I know Corinne feels the same way, kind of to demonstrate for people what types of things one can do as a volunteer and what types of activities might go under that umbrella of volunteering, rather than just, you know, saying, here's what we've done in a vacuum. You know? So we're kind of doing this to share with you so you know what types of things are out there too, and rather than just focusing on ourselves. So I just wanted to say that before I start.
Great. Yeah.
And so, as I recall, I started my volunteering in this industry pretty early in my career by submitting, this is what's in my memory anyway, is the first thing, by submitting to speak at an ATA conference for the first time, because I've done it many times since then, and that is definitely a thing you can do, I would totally consider volunteering, because it's a lot of work, as people who present it know, to present, and, you know, kind of can be stressful sometimes to get up there in front of your colleagues, even though I think, at least in the ATA, I heard someone say this just recently, that, you know, in a way, it's a friendly audience, people want you to succeed. That definitely is volunteering for the time you put into it and helping your colleagues. So, and at that time, I gave a presentation on translator resumes because I had seen thousands of translator resumes at that point, and I had some practical tips to give back. So the point of me saying that is that even though I had just started out, when a year or two before, at that point, I did have something real specific to share, I think with the community that was helpful to people. So, so you could look for, even if you're a beginner, you can look for in your own background, like, well, what information do I have to share, or what perspective do I have to share that would be interesting to people, even if you're just starting out. So I've also written a lot of articles over the years for industry publications, and I have here in my notes, since pretty much the beginning of time, haha, just kidding. Since the very beginning of my time in the industry, on areas like again that I had expertise in, which that expertise has evolved over time. So I'm not still writing, X number of years later about the same thing I may have written about in the beginning, but I'm still, as my expertise has evolved, I feel that that's a useful thing to write for different industry publications. It could be a local publication, it could be a national one, or it could be international one. So I've also pretty much always given presentations to business or industry groups too, which maybe is a direct benefit to myself and getting some exposure, but I also think does help our industry by educating the general business public about what we do, as well as, like I said, sharing knowledge with colleagues, at different types of functions. So I was also the editor of the French Language Division newsletter for the American Translators Association, and it was a long time ago. And so I think that was for 3 years. And this was back when it was published in paper format. So in addition to the role of finding people willing to write articles and possibly editing them, I was also in charge of getting the printed version. I know that sounds hysterical, especially to our younger listeners, but yeah. But I was responsible for getting the printed version off to ATA headquarters so they could run copies and mail them off to all members.
Right, photocopy it and put the stamps on.
Yeah, exactly. That part I didn't do. They did that, but yeah. And I think, well, I think I'm going to mention this. I'm not sure. I know Corinne's heard this story, and I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on the podcast. But one thing I used to do was literally back then we had the ATA directory was not online. It was on paper, and so I would literally go through everybody who was in the French language division list, start at the letter A, and I would call people up and say, "Hi, I'm the
Oh,
editor."
and like cold call them and say, I'm the editor of the French language division newsletter.
Yeah, and I'd say like, "Oh, do you want to write an article? Do you have what's your interest lately? Do you want to write an article?" And that's not really my personality, the cold call. But for volunteering, I felt like it was okay, or whatever. So anyway, that's kind of funny. But so I've also been active in our local association since my first days in the industry, and as many of you know, for us, that's the Colorado Translators Association. And my idea behind that, and I think for our listeners, you can think about too, how you relate to your local group, or if there is a local group, or if you want to start a local group. We have a relatively small but dynamic group, and it takes all hands on deck over the years to keep it going strong. And so, I'll see people I've known, like, oh yeah, so and so served as president, so and so served as secretary, so have I, or whatever. I served as vice president, and Corinne can tell you about what she did. And then I also served as email list creator and moderator for about t over 10 years, I think. And now I still love the organization, and like I said, want to keep it. We all want to keep it going strong, and we all have to still give some of our energy to it, to keep it going, I think. And so I do help organize social get-togethers and also one-off meetings that I know I've mentioned before, like on specific issues that I talked about in another episode, where I organized Trato Studio peer-to-peer, group or whatever, where we talked about different things we could learn about Trato Studio. But I'm still involved in more of an informal way. But I still feel that I, can contribute to my own organization in helping it to, progress. So, and then, sorry, I'm almost done.
No, keep going.
For the ATA itself, the American Translators Association, which is, as people probably know, our national group that Corinne was president of till recently. I worked on the newsletter, as I mentioned, and then I've also been on various committees over the years, and I also served 4 years as the administrator of the French Language Division, so our kind of our special interest group specifically focused on French language. And now I'm on the board of the association, and I also serve as the chair of the ATA Public Relations Committee. So one thing that came to mind as I was making, kind of writing up my notes for this was that it sounds like a lot of stuff, but I've been in the industry a long time and it might sound like it's overwhelming. Like you may be thinking to yourself as a listener, oh my gosh, that's so much stuff, I couldn't possibly do it. But I wanted to add that, you know, this is over many years. And I also want to say that I've always found it as something energizing rather than as an overwhelming. And it's always been an opportunity to exchange ideas with my colleagues, to receive support from them and to learn from them. And in addition to getting to contribute and say, hey, I think this or whatever, you know, kind of having a role as a volunteer, getting to shape, you know, getting to shape the direction of some small piece of some other organization. So, yeah. So Corinne, could you tell our listeners about your background in volunteering in the translation industry?
Sure. So, speaking of printed paper newsletters, I started out as the newsletter editor for the Colorado Translators Association back in 2002, when, as you said, I used to do the newsletter on my computer at home, print it, and then take it to the photocopy shop to get the copies made. And then I would actually meet up with another volunteer to put the address labels on and stamps.
Send it off.
I know. It sort of sounds like from the, you know, Pony Express days, but it's sort of crazy that that was, quote unquote, only 17 years ago, but in the grand scheme of things, not that long.
Right.
That it used to be, we had a separate volunteer who just helped with that, putting on address labels and stamps. So it was not a strategic move on my part, just when I moved to Colorado and had just started freelancing and didn't know a single person. I joined Colorado Translators Association and answered their call for a newsletter editor. But in the end, it was actually an excellent strategic move because I did that newsletter editor job for, I think, about 3 years. And in that time, I got to know pretty much everyone in the association through either interviewing them, or we would run like member news updates and people would email me stuff about themselves. You know, they presented at a conference, or they published a book, or they had a baby, or whatever. Or even little administrative things like changing their address, it was still a reason that I would correspond with them. So it was, in the end, a huge boost to my business, even though that wasn't my purpose. So after that, I got sort of lightly involved with the American Translators Association because one of those translators I met in Colorado, so shout out to Michelle Landis if she's listening to this.
Hi Michelle.
A woman I met through Colorado Translators Association encouraged me to run for assistant administrator of the ATA French language division. So that was my first volunteer role in ATA. And from there, I moved up to French language division administrator. And then I ran for president of the Colorado Translators Association in 2008. So Eve, as you said, you and I served together as president and vice president for 4 years. And I think we sort of split the job. I mean, that's one sort of pro tip about volunteer roles is, I think if there's something that you want to take on, but you're concerned about the time commitment, you could find someone you really trust to do it with you. So I think whereas in some associations, like the president does everything and the vice president is just basically there to fill in if the president can't do something, that even though technically I was president and you were vice president, we really sort of split the work in half. And I think that worked really well for us.
And I think that, and like you're saying, I think that works well for a lot of the smaller organizations because it's too much for one person to take on. There's not a big pool of people.
Right. And then you can say, I think it's totally acceptable to approach those smaller organizations as a package deal and sort of say, for example, I'd be willing to run for president if Eve can, if you'd put Eve forward for vice president, and then we'll basically do it together.
Yeah.
Because I think that's not collusion, because the problem isn't that they have six other people who want to run for vice president. It's that they have no one.
Oh yeah. And I actually remembered that, that just kind of jump off what you're saying right there is that I have, and I think Corinne has too, served on the nominating committee for ATA for different things, but also for our local association. And yes, the problem isn't that everyone's clamoring to do it and you have to have these big contested elections. The problem is that no one will do it. And so I think people are open, and especially in the smaller organizations, to flexible, a flexible approach.
Yes. Like, could we run as co-presidents? You know, could we, like, I'll do it if this person who I really trust can be vice president.
Or can because run I'll tell for vice you, president,
yeah. Yeah, can run for vice president. I'll tell you for sure, there's been at least one ATA chapter over the years that has had to go inactive for a period of years because no one would run for president. So in your smaller associations, I think that's a really good point, Eve. It's worth thinking out of the box about the leadership structure, and even say, you know, there's three of us who would be willing to run as co-chair, if we can all do it together. Uh-huh. So yeah, you and I served as president and vice president of Colorado Translators Association for 4 years. And at that point I ran for the ATA board. So I was elected as director in 2017 and I served 2012. And I served 3 years as director and then 2 years as president-elect and 2 years as president. And my president term just ended October 25th. So I was on the ATA board for 7 years altogether. And I am now calling myself retired from association life, at least for the moment. So Eve, question for you. Of course, the main reason that all of us volunteer for the profession is to contribute to the advancement of a specific association or to the profession in general. But I think our listeners would be interested to know, what strategic benefits have you seen in your career from all of this very extensive professional service that you've done?
Yeah, so this is my, like, thinking of it strategically, I never really, sorry to disappoint everyone, I never really had a strategic motivation mm-hmm. or purpose in volunteering, but I know I have definitely received direct benefits from doing so. And so just to back up a little bit, I think just from my own perspective, my husband and I, like in our family, we both strongly believe in volunteering in areas that are important to us. And we, you know, discussed that over the years. And so like locally in our community and also for other things like translation that are important to us. So as an example, just kind of outside translation, but is still related to languages. He has volunteered for over 20 years at our local Alliance Française. And over the years, I've actually tried to get him to stop. You know? And I think I might have mentioned this before. But then he made clear, you know, like years ago now, like, well, all my friends are there and I like it. And I'm like, oh, okay, go ahead and do it then. But as I mentioned before, I have always found it energizing personally to volunteer. And that's, you know, I find that as a personal benefit because I've been blessed to exchange ideas, you know, with colleagues in doing so. It's not that you don't just volunteer in the vacuum, as I think kind of Corinne touched on. So a direct benefit to me has been working with people in the industry, getting to know them better and learning from them, both about translation, like, you know, the actual task of translation, like to make me a better translator, and also for business related issues, like, oh, I never thought of that from a marketing perspective, or, oh, I never realized I could do that in Trados, you know, so it makes me more efficient or whatever. So another example I could give here is often our local chapter, as we've mentioned, is the Colorado Translators Association, asks for volunteers to staff a table for our group at the yearly World Trade Organization, or what's it called? No, the World Trade Center. Is that, they have a big conference in our region in the spring. And so if we do volunteer to help man that table for the CTA, we either get free entrance to the conference or a significantly reduced rate. And it's actually pretty expensive to attend that one. So that's a direct benefit to anybody who volunteers. And I don't do it every year because I also want to give other people the opportunity. And sometimes I'm too busy or whatever. But I have done it. And I know lots of other people in the group, you know, have gotten to do that, too. So that's a direct benefit. And other benefits, I think, are less tangible. But, you know, that I'm not getting money per se or, you know, a discount, but just as important. So, for example, obviously a side effect of volunteering in various capacities is that you most likely will increase your name recognition inside and maybe even outside of the profession, which I consider to be a something very positive. So people know who you are then, or more than would have otherwise, and may refer work to you or may refer other people to you for various reasons. So that's just, it could just be further networking overall, even if it's not directly related to a specific job. And I think too, we do have to go into it not thinking, oh, if I volunteer, I'm going to get more work. I mean, I think in the bigger picture, and if you do it long enough, that could be a direct, you know,
you
that
probably
could be,
will,
yeah,
right?
but
You
it's not
probably
going to be
will,
something,
yeah.
yeah, but it's not going to be like, you know, okay, I make a tick mark because I got a job from that. It's not going to be like that. It's more just
Right.
like you came out there, you know. I've had people say, not about volunteering, but I've had people say to me, oh, I went to a networking event and I didn't immediately get a job for it, so I'm not doing that again. I'm like, okay, like you don't really understand the, you know, bigger picture. So, and I think you can get, you know, more recognition. It could be local, it could be national, or it could even be international level, you know, especially because, of course, our industry is all those things, local, national, and international. So, yeah, Corinne, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on that. And if you have a specific strategic purpose in volunteering, or how do you feel like that's played out over your career?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, I started really with no strategic purpose whatsoever, because the major asset I had when I first started freelancing was that I had a ton of time. So that's one, I mean, a ton being relative, because I also had a tiny baby. Who's now 17. But one tip I would give our listeners is that when you're first starting out and you don't have a ton of work, a good way to make productive use of some of your time is to do some professional volunteering. So as I mentioned with the Colorado Association newsletter, after doing that for 3 years, I knew pretty much everyone in the association. And actually, a number of them referred work to me because they knew and trusted me through that job. So I'd say if you are part of an association that has any type of in-person events, that's also a good way to get to know people is, for example, be the person who passes out the name badges, or, you know, picks the speakers up at the airport or things like that. And that's a really good, you know, networking objective. So in terms of volunteering for a national association, like you said, Eve, I think that the benefit of getting to know people and people getting to know you is pretty huge. And you also get to be sort of up close and personal with the people who are the person you want to be when you advance in your career. And they get to know you and trust you by seeing that you're reliable. So I think it's really important to focus on skills that you have that can be beneficial to the association that you volunteer for. So for example, without a doubt, my strengths are people and programs, not the finance and governance side. Like the last job I would ever volunteer for is treasurer.
Oh, me too. Just so everybody knows, don't ask us to be treasurer.
Right. I mean, and that being said, you know, I think Colorado Translators Association knows that if they were ever in danger of folding because they couldn't find a treasurer, one of us could probably be convinced to do it. But
right.
the point being, in terms of my own strengths, I think when you can choose what your role is, you always want to focus on your individual strengths and think about, for example, the intersection between what you're really good at and what the association needs. And honestly, like, I would rather plan the entire Colorado Translators Association mid-year conference than do the books. You know,
right, right. We love it. So we do it if it was on death's door, but we don't really want to do that.
But right. When you think, like, you know, I would rather write up the descriptions and presenter bios for every single session at the Colorado Mid-Year Conference than I would do the accounting. So focus on your, you know, your personal strengths and how those can benefit that association.
Yeah, thanks. So moving on to a slightly different topic, but we've kind of touched on it slightly when what was already said. We all know that the ever-expanding demands of volunteer work can become overwhelming and suck you in. So especially if you're volunteering, as we've said, for a small local association that needs an endless amount of volunteer help, what suggestions do you have, Corinne, for setting limits around professional volunteer work?
Yeah, I think that's really important because, as you said, Eve, it is true that volunteer work can take over your life if you let it. And I think all of us who are actively involved in professional volunteering have that doer slash overdoer personality. So, for example, like my husband says to me, you know, if you say something's going to happen, it'll happen because you're a doer, not a talker. No, wait, you're a doer and a talker. So I think most of us have that personality. And like one of the best pieces of advice that my mom still gives me is, you can't do it all, at least not today. So I think all of us need to earn money and have a life outside of work and all of that. So I would say start with a small and clearly defined task where you can do a good job at it and where it's clear what you're getting into and you can get to know sort of the culture of this organization that you might be involved with. So stick with that task and do a great job at it. You know, be the person who makes the name badges for the mid-year conference while anticipating that if you are reliable, you will probably be asked to do more, but it's okay to stick with what you said you were going to do. So I think one thing you should definitely set is to always have an insight into what the job is going to involve, rather than just diving in to a high level position. So, for example, at the ATA conference, I talked to more than one translator who said, here's the situation. I'm a member of my local translators association. I've never been on the board, and now they want me to run for vice president. And that's something I would be pretty cautious about because I think the worst outcome for professional volunteering is getting in over your head and not being able to follow through. So I think all of us, like I'm sure you've had experiences like this too, Eve, have encountered volunteers who, you know, dive into a big position and then say, oh my gosh, this is a lot of work. I don't have time for this. And I think their heart is in the right place, but you need to have a sense of what that organization is like before you volunteer for, you know, let's say treasurer. And I
And
think
I've seen it
another
the
good,
I think that
yeah,
I've
go
seen it
ahead.
on the flip side too, where we when I was on nominating committee, we had people volunteer, like you're saying, probably with good intentions, but I wasn't ha you know I wasn't necessarily going to promote them to actually be on the ballot because I felt like they don't necessarily understand what we're looking for. It's not a good fit because one person who actually volunteered wasn't even a member. So I just felt like, you know, whatever, maybe they had good intentions, but it wasn't really speaking to us as the nominating committee when they hadn't even been involved in the organization before for the reasons you say, and or then I was kind of a little bit suspicious of why did they want to belong to do, even be the vice president when they hadn't belonged. Anyway, kind of related to what you said.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, exactly. I think both of those situations are sort of not optimal on both ends. The asking your member who's never been on the board to run for president, or the out of nowhere inquiry from someone who says, I've always wanted to be involved with your organization, so I'll join and run for president. I think both of those are suboptimal. So I think another good limit is to focus on one role or project at a time. So that can really help avoid the creeping nature of the volunteer stuff and can help you avoid feelings of guilt over turning down these repeated requests for volunteer time if you have that issue with which most of us do. So, for example, when you get asked to run for the board of your local association, you know, you could say, right now I'm on the conference planning committee, but once that's done, maybe I'd consider it. So could you keep me on the list for next year? And I think once you rise to a certain level of volunteering, like I think, you know, both of us would probably say this about the ATA board, you really can't limit anymore what you get asked to do or are expected to do. So it's more a matter of thinking in terms of a number of hours a day or week that you have to devote to that. So, for example, when I was ATA president, it really was like a half-time job. I'd say I spent sometimes 3 or even 4 hours a day working on that. But it was still really important to set limits because I couldn't economically or in terms of business viability afford to pause my paying work completely. And it really could have taken over my whole working life. So, Eve, how about some thoughts from you on limits?
So basically, I agree with everything you said, Corinne, and I'm done. No, I'm just kidding.
That's why we get
Sorry.
along volunteering together.
Sorry, listeners, I'm not done. I'm going to go on some more.
Yeah.
So, no, I think I had written down too that I think it's really important to be able to say no if you can't take on a task or role for whatever reason, and to not feel like you have to say yes every time you're asked. You don't. And believe it or not, people, I've even said no to Corinne in the past for different
You
tasks.
have. Yes,
When she.
you've even turned me down, and we're
Yeah.
like real life BFFs in
Yep.
addition to.
Exactly. For there was the pressure of the ATA president asking me and one of my BFFs, and I said no
Right.
because I felt like, and I think the reason, you know, I think the reason anybody should do that is because if you say yes, as Corinne alluded to, people are depending on you to do it, and it looks bad if you don't do it, if you don't come through and do what the thing that you said you do. And I also, in turn, have asked people to do a volunteer thing that they are really excited about, and then they got into it and said, "You know what? I actually can't do this," and that was okay, actually. I mean, it was because it wasn't like it went on for years and years and they didn't do anything, and I was much happier with them doing that and saying, and then they also do other volunteer work. And I was much happier and thought, oh, that didn't really affect the relationship because they told me pretty quick and because they have done other things for me that were really great. And I felt like, good, you know, you told me and now I know that you can't do it and I'll move on. And I didn't really feel like I was holding that against them because
So
so.
rather than, I think the main thing there is, rather than it comes time for them to deliver to you the thing they agreed to do, and it turns out they never started it, that they
Exactly.
said, you know what, I hate to disappoint you, but now that I've looked over the specifications for this, it's just not going to work out. I misunderstood the scope of this, and I don't have time.
Yeah, and I actually just saying, I think I've understood, I explained things pretty well, and the people sometimes too well get too detailed. But I think that when they actually got down to it, it was just going to be too much. Yeah, and they said, no, I can't do it, and so that was okay too, as long as it didn't go on, you know, for years like that. And then, like we said, I think it really helps you either saying no up front or as soon as you know to retain a good relationship with that person or the organization who's asking you, who probably will come back to you another time, than to stretch yourself too thin and not be able to perform. Because once you say yes, people are depending on you in these organizations. And I do have a funny example, and I'm not sure if we've ever told this on the podcast or not. But in our local group, again, the Colorado Translators Association, when Corinne and I were VP and president of the CTA, the person who had volunteered to be treasurer stopped answering any of our emails or calls and ended up taking off with a checkbook. And so no fraud happened, even though the person, I think they were just overwhelmed and they
Yeah,
felt
in the
embarrassed.
days before online banking,
Yes.
disappeared with the checkbook,
Yes, there might
right?
have been some online banking, I don't remember anymore, but it was really like minimal as compared to today.
We
Yeah.
could like check the balance online, but that was
But
about it.
it
You
was a
certainly
big
couldn't
deal.
pay people online,
Yeah. And I
right?
don't think the person took the checkbook to take money from the organization because
No,
they
no,
never
no,
did.
right.
Even though I think we had to stop, you know, cancel all those checks or whatever, was that they were just embarrassed and didn't want to have anything to do with us anymore. What does that say about us? No. But that was stressful for a small organization. And obviously that person burned any bridges that she would have had with other translators who were involved in that, you know, so. That's an extreme case, but you want to be able to, you don't want to say yes to too many things because you want to be able to do what you said you're going to do. So, and also kind of related to what Corinne said, I think you don't want to say yes to things that you're not interested in doing. Even if you're not that busy, even if you think, well, I have the time, but I don't really want to do that. Because there's really tons of volunteer opportunities, so you should only say yes to things that you're really interested in so that you don't hate doing it and that you do a good job is another take on that. Also, know that you don't have to be asked. If you see a need or you think you've identified a need in an organization or something that you'd particularly like to be involved in, then step up and ask if help is needed in that particular area. And so most likely that'll be welcome. And if not, if that particular area is filled, they might say, oh, but there's some related things like this. Would you be interested in this? And again, say yes if you like it and say no if you don't. So.
And I think, to give an example, I sometimes forget that you and I do many things outside the translation industry. And as an example, my daughter's heavily involved with her high school mountain bike team. And after her freshman year, I approached the coach and said, the team needs a newsletter. Or like, would you be interested in the team having a newsletter? And I'll write it. And I think most of the time, people are very receptive. Like, people in leadership positions get so much input from people who don't want to do anything.
Right. You need a newsletter, exactly. And you were
Yes.
saying you could do it.
Right. Like, the
Yeah.
team needs a newsletter. You should find someone to do that. That I think it's always welcome when you say, our local translators association should be on Instagram. What about if I create an account and run it? That I think that is a really good way to approach someone rather than what people in leadership get very burnt out on, which is, unsolicited input about what this association needs with no offer to help.
Right, exactly. The other thing I wanted to say on this topic, this subtopic, excuse me, on this subtopic was I also don't think we need to be pressured. You don't need to feel pressure from yourself or anyone else to stay in a role for too long. And
Good
so,
point.
yeah,
Really good point.
as a volunteer, I feel like sometimes it's stressful when I have had this and I've kind of tried, gotten over it, but I have gone through this phase where you spend a lot of time and energy on something and you want to make sure that it goes on forever. And so that could lead to not wanting to give it up, but also you're kind of getting burned out. And then also it could maybe being lead to being kind of meddling when the next people take over. So of course you want people to build on it in a positive way, but my point is that at some point you have to let go and you have to let the next group take over whatever it is. And
Really good point.
you can't stress yourself out having to be involved forever or ever, or like I said, coming across as a busybody. So it's good to pass the baton over the years and get, new energy and new ideas. So you need to be able to let go and be free and letting go of those past responsibilities for the next volunteers. So
And to give an example of that, when my term as ATA president was ending, I sort of felt like I'm ready to have more time for my own things, and ATA is ready for a different set of eyes on the recurring challenges. And so I actually told Ted Wozniak, who's the new president, who was president-elect under me, I don't want any significant volunteer role during his term as president. And what I told him is, if you need something, I will always be here for that. Like, if you need advice, if there's something that you really feel like, I'm the person to do it, then of course tell me. But I am not going to propose myself as a volunteer for anything significant during Ted's term for exactly the reasons you mentioned, Eve. Because I think, I really appreciated what David Rumsey, who was the president before me, let me do it my way, and do some things the same and some things differently, and said, I'm always here if you need me, but I really want this to be to for you to be able to put your touch on this. So I think that's a great point about letting go.
And I think too, I found that in the, I mean, I figured for the French language administrator, and sorry, being the French language administrator, which we both have been, but me a little bit more recently than Corinne, when I handed it over to the current people who are really awesome, Jen Mercer and Andy Ho, I knew they'd do really cool stuff. And then some stuff, like I think we did cool stuff too when I was the admin, but then of course they did really cool stuff. And I was like, oh my gosh, I never thought of that. Oh my gosh. So they added some really new cool things that was just new blood, new people doing it, and they come up with new ideas. So, and continuing on, I think, in a nice way, what we had built before. So I think, Corinne, changing a little bit our focus, as we found over the years, there are various volunteer roles that may seem more appropriate or that we're more comfortable with at different phases of our careers. So what are your thoughts on that?
So I would say mostly think about the intersection between the volunteer role and your personal life. So, most freelancers, part of the reason they are a freelancer is because they have a significant life outside of work. So whether that's their kids or their dogs or their interest in, Ironman racing, whatever it is, I think you want to think about how those volunteer roles fit in or rather don't with your personal life. So for example, I'll tell you an interesting story that when years and years ago, Jane Mayer, who is a member of Colorado Translators Association and has been done a couple of terms on the ATA board, said to me, when do you think you might run for the ATA board? And I said, well, check back with me when my daughter goes to college. And she said, and she also has one child, a daughter, and she said, if you want my advice, when your kid or kids leaves home, you have your life back to yourself, and you might not want to be tied down by a responsibility like the ATA board at that time, which turned out for me to be really true. I'm glad that I ran for the ATA board when I did. But I also, set some limits on that role because of my personal life. So, for example, I said, I really don't want to travel other than to go to the ATA board meetings because that's already 5 times a year because you do 4 board meetings and then you go visit the conference location. And I just felt like with my daughter still living at home, I really did not want to be traveling, every month. But everyone has to decide that for themselves. But I think as far as the phasing, I'm interested to hear what you're going to say, Eve, but my comment would be mostly, whether you are on the beginning end of the spectrum and you're thinking, how would this fit in if I think I might want to start a family in 3 years? Or you're thinking, there's this Ironman race in Japan. I don't even know if they have Ironman in Japan.
Hawaii,
I want to try to qualify for Ironman Kona. And I'm thinking that, this might be my last year to try to qualify for Ironman Kona, then take advantage of the fact that I think for most of us, whatever the non-work aspect of our lives is, that's a big reason why we're freelancers. And you don't necessarily want your association work to encroach on that because then you're going to resent it.
Or like you said,
Eve,
take a
what do you
smaller
think?
role. Like, yeah, absolutely. I didn't think of that in my notes actually, and I think that's a really awesome perspective. And and also the idea that maybe you just take on a smaller role. Like you would just do a local thing that you kind of enjoy meeting people, but you're not doing this thing that takes so much time or something. Yeah, cool. Well, the other notes, the other thoughts I had were like maybe in the beginning of your career, think about things that would help you learn about the industry more and to make your initial connections, kind of like we both talked about with the things we did at the beginning, met a lot of people that way. And I mean, we still meet a lot of people, but that was really particularly valuable in the beginning, before we didn't have other ways of meeting people. I think, again, kind of what I mentioned, that you could do presentations at any stage in your career if you have a specific perspective. Like you may say, oh, starting out, I have a really big, I know more about tech than you guys because I just graduated from college or whatever. I mean, we're all pretty techy, but like you have a specific perspective for some reason, or I know more about social media. I want to, make you guys more up to date on social media and some kind of expertise that you have that other people don't have necessarily, even when you're just starting out, or, some special expertise. And then I was thinking mid and late career, later career, maybe share info about the industry or other expertise you have. And any time, volunteering helps you learn a new skill that may also help you in your business. An example is for the PR committee, I have people, a lot of volunteers who are doing really great things to promote the American Translators Association, but I think they also learn some cool skills that they might be able to apply to their own business about public relations,
Oh,
that kind of
yeah,
thing.
right. About media
So.
interviews and right, pitching articles to publications and things like that.
Yeah, so I do think, and I know Corinne agrees probably, that anytime is a good time to get involved. You just have to kind of, figure, like we said, like where does it fit in, where your life is and where your career is at that time. So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, great. Well, thanks everyone once again for tuning in to Speaking of Translation. And also, we wanted to say that it was really enjoyable to both of us to meet a number of our listeners at the ATA conference in Palm Springs and to get positive feedback from you about the show. And I, Corinne can tell us what her specific encounters were, but I had several fun elevator encounters where people told me that they enjoyed listening and that made my day. So thank you.
Yeah, it was really fun meeting our listeners. And I think actually my favorite listener encounter was maybe at the at last year's ATA conference in New Orleans when one of our listeners came up and asked me if it would be at all possible to meet Eve in person. And I was like, let me check with her agent. We'll see.
That's a joke, by the way, if anyone didn't get that yet.
Yes, exactly. That's a joke because we love meeting our listeners in person and hearing that you guys really enjoy the show. And I actually recently heard from a listener who said that she discovered our podcast at the, she's only been freelancing a couple months. She discovered the podcast and she has since binge listened every episode. So, we do this just to share information and, get stuff out to the community. So it's always really great to hear those. So thanks for listening. And if you don't already subscribe to Speaking of Translation, we hope that you will do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or now Spotify.
Or anywhere else
And
that you get your podcasts.
yes, or wherever else fine podcasts are distributed. And if you have an idea for a show, you can always email us at speakingoftranslation@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website, speakingoftranslation.com. Thanks, and we'll talk to you in a future episode.